from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, in for Michael Krasny. Coming up, award-winning photographer Carolyn Jones. Her latest project profiles 75 men and women on the front lines of healthcare in the United States. Her book is called The American Nurse. It includes photographs and interviews of nurses as primary care providers, healers, social workers, and counselors. From the Bronx to rural Wyoming to New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina, they're helping patients and their families cope with illness, pain, poverty, and sometimes death. Carolyn Jones joins us to talk about her latest book and the people she met along the way. We'll get started with Forum right after this. And welcome back to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, here this week for Michael Krasny. Photographer and filmmaker Carolyn Jones gained international attention for an award-winning book, Living Proof, Courage in the Face of AIDS. And now she's turned her attention to the men and women at the heart of the U.S. healthcare system, nurses. Her new book, The American Nurse, profiles 75 nurses from across the country, inner cities to small towns, even behind bars in a state prison. It's full of photographs and interviews that reveal what motivates nurses and workplaces that are full of life, death, sickness, pain, and fear, emotions ranging from joy to anger and grief. Carolyn Jones, welcome to Forum.
Oh, thank you so much, Scott. It's great to be here.
Good to have you. And also with us, Rhonda Collins, who is a registered nurse, vice president, and business manager for the Fresenius Kabi USA, which is a pharmaceutical company that funded this book. Good to have you here as well.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Let me begin with you, Carolyn. At the very beginning in the intro, you said, you wrote that I thought a nurse was a nurse, you know, before you started this project. What did you mean by that, and how did that image change?
Well, I mean, you go into the hospital and a nurse takes your blood or reads your blood pressure or something, and I really didn't think about all the different kinds of nursing that we have. I certainly didn't think about how versatile the field is and all of the kind of unusual kind of nursing that there is, you know, from helicopter nursing to emergency room. And so I immediately changed my thinking from this person who would just come into the room and put a needle in your arm and take your blood to, you know, a very, very diverse group of people.
And what made you think, gee, this would be a great focus for a book?
Well, it was Rhonda's idea to make this book. So it was Rhonda's idea to celebrate the American nurse. And For me, it spoke to me very personally because of an experience that I had had, and I'd had a wonderful nurse that really changed my life and helped me get through a difficult time, and it was a wonderful opportunity for me to give back.
Can you tell us a little more about that?
Sure. I had breast cancer, and I had chemotherapy that was difficult to go through, and incredibly personal, but I had a port in my chest, and someone was going to have to wheel some stuff into a room and stick a needle in there and you know, give me the chemo. And it just so happened to be this wonderful woman named Joanne Staha. And I don't know how she did it. She found humor. She made me laugh. She made me feel okay. She made it okay that I didn't have any hair, you know. She was always the one who gave me the chemo, and she got me through it. And you know, when you go through something like that, it's not exactly like you finish it and you call them up and have dinner with the nurse later. I don't even think I ever really thanked her, to be honest. You know, I didn't know what to say. And you finish an experience like that, and that's the end of it, and you go on with your life. But it was always in the back of my head. So when Rhonda came up with this idea of celebrating the American nurse, that was the first place I turned, so I tracked her down.
And Rhonda, there is an amazing intimacy between patients and nurses, isn't there? You're in a moment of real, oftentimes, not always, but real vulnerability.
And absolutely. I've always said that nurses see the human condition at its very worst and at its very best. We are incredibly resilient. The human condition is incredibly resilient, but incredibly fragile. And as nurses, you lead families through all of that. You you hold hands, you cry with them sometimes, and you celebrate with them for sure.
Yeah. And there is, I mean, in my own experience with nurses, just a special kind of personality or kind of a real humanity to nurses. They've seen it all,
yeah,
it seems, and they're not fazed by it. And they do bring humor sometimes to some of the most, just extraordinary circumstances.
Yes, we do. Because I think that sometimes it's more than you can absorb just to know that you're about to deliver some devastating news or you're about to do something that you know is that patient or that individual is not going to feel well for a while, like chemotherapy. But you always recognize the greater good, the end cause and what you're trying to do and bring it all together. And I do think that all of us, no matter what our profession or what our specialty is in nursing, that we have this high level of commitment to make life better. And sometimes that's not for the patient. Sometimes it's for the family that's left behind. But we always want to make life better.
Yeah. There are 75, I think, nurses profiled in this book. How many nurses did you talk to?
103.
103.
Actually,
okay.
Yeah. I mean, and every single nurse that I had a chance to talk to has a voice on the website. So there are, all of their interviews are there. We only were able to put 75 in the book. But
yeah. And how did you go about even getting those 103?
Well, that was a journey, actually. Again, I didn't know anything about nursing when we started this. So Lisa Frank, who's a producer that I work with on this project and just about everything that I do, we sat down together and thought, you know, what issues do we want to capture across the country? We wanted to make sure that we captured enough of America as much as we could. So we wanted to get to all the different regions. And we wanted to inspire people to kind of want to be nurses. And so we wanted to show, you know, different kinds of nursing in different parts of the country.
Well, let's listen. As you said, there are the voices of many of the nurses are, or all, I guess all 75 are actually on the website.
All 103.
All 103.
On the website, yeah.
So let's hear from one of them. We'll start with, is it Elisa Fraser? Am I saying that right?
Elisa Fraser, yes.
And she's in, works in Florida at the Tidewell Hospice. Do you want to say anything about her before we hear her?
Well, I think that the main thing that Elisa did for me, and again, humor is such a part of nursing, but she's a great storyteller, and I think she helps change people's idea of what hospice is really all about. So let's hear what she has to say.
I had this this older woman one time that was admitted, and I went in and I was talking to her, and the night before she was real friendly and calm and stuff, and I went in this particular evening and she was angry, and I said to her, "What's wrong, honey?" And she said, "Well, this is ridiculous. I'm waiting and I'm waiting and I'm waiting and nobody ever comes." And I said, "I'm sorry, did you call for something?" She goes, "Well, no, not really, but I'm waiting and waiting." And I'm like, "What are you waiting for? Did someone promise to bring you something?" And she goes, "Well, yeah." And I said, "Well, what was it? I'll go get a few right now." She goes, "You know." And I said, "I'm not following you." She goes, "Well, this is hospice, isn't it?" And I said, "Yes, it is. But what do you mean?" And she goes, "Well, when am I getting the big one?" And I said, "The big one of what?" And then I realized, because she was slapping at her arm, that she was waiting for some kind of big injection, you know, that was going to... And I said, "Honey, I don't think you understand what hospice is about." And she goes, "Well, aren't you going to give me that big needle and make it happen, like, and get this over with already? How much longer do I have to wait?"
Hmm. Carolyn Jones, that speaks to, sort of a larger misconceptions about hospice. A lot of people have them. And I imagine that through the course of putting this book together, you maybe found your own misperceptions about nursing and healthcare.
Every day. I mean, every day that I was on this project, my idea changed about so many different things. But hospice is a big one. No one really understands what goes on there and what it's really all about. Well, I mean, I shouldn't say no one. Some people do. But I think there are a lot of misconceptions. And I think that was such a great thing for the great story for Elisa to tell us, because that's what people think, that you're going to go in and someone's going to come in with this big needle. The rest of what she said was, the woman ultimately said to her, Elisa said, "Well, you don't really want that big shot, do you?" And the woman said, "No, what I really want is some steak and potatoes." And, you know, I think that really speaks to the reality of it. People are scared to go in. And what we've found was that there's a very, very rich environment in hospice. And when it works well, it's beautiful.
My mom passed away this past year and ended up in hospice toward the very, very end. And it really is about not – it's about the whole family as well. It's about the person, of course, who's going through it, but everyone around them too.
And that's, I think, what's unique to hospice and that can't really happen in the hospital in the same way. And I think this opens up a whole conversation about healthcare in this country, that if we could learn that and if we could sort of allow that to happen maybe a little bit sooner, it could help people more.
Yeah. What about you, Rhonda Collins? First of all, tell us, who is Fresenius Kabi, by the way? What is that?
It's actually a German company, German families, that started this company back in the 1930s. And it's a global, worldwide company focused on healthcare and wellness for humankind across the world. Medical devices, pharmaceutical, clinical nutrition, all of the things that come together. We are, of course, a German company, so one of the initiatives I had was I said, I just want people to be able to say our name. Because it's,
did I say it right?
You did. Great job. So when we contacted Carolyn, I mean, it's a company that's definitely focused on caring for the caregivers and the patients, you know, through what we do. And we were very much, I think it says something for the leadership and the executive board of our company that they would support something like the American Nurse for the purpose of simply edifying the nurse.
Yeah. And Carolyn, tell us about the photographs, starting with the one on the cover, which is one of, I'm trying to think now, I know that this is one of the nurses I think we had audio from, but tell us about her, about them. There's two people on the cover.
Right. Well, on the cover is a nurse named Colleen Lemoyne, and she's an oncology nurse from New Orleans. And first of all, she made it to the cover of our book, but what's funny is I think she hates having her photograph taken more than I do. I mean,
which one is she? The one
she is the woman with her eyes closed, smiling, with her head, mm-hmm. her hand is on the head of her patient, Kimberly. And so we met Colleen, and she had gone through Hurricane Katrina and really has an extraordinary story that's in the book and I think is very, very powerful. But it's made her such a deep woman. And we had our interview, and there were always lots of tears during these interviews, but that was a particular weeper. And I started to photograph her, and I took her up on the roof of the hospital with the Superdome in the background. And I stood her there, and she didn't like it, and it didn't feel right, and it felt like we were looking back in a way that we shouldn't be, and it didn't really represent who she is. So she had told me this story that she loves her chemo patients when they've lost all their hair, and she can hug their head and kiss them on the head. She just loves them at that stage. She thinks that they're the most authentic and vulnerable, and it's so true. And of course, that spoke to me because of my own personal experience. So Colleen marched into the oncology department that day, and Kimberly was sitting there getting a transfusion while we took that photograph. And she agreed to be in the photograph, and Colleen went right over to her. And the photograph, which is the essence of this entire project, and kind of, I think Colleen embodies the essence of nursing, because it just hollers the word caring. And so I'm very, very proud to have Colleen grace the cover of this book.
Well, we actually have an audio clip from her. Maybe we can listen to that right now. This is Colleen Lemoyne, who is at the LSU State Hospital. Is that the right way to say it?
That's right.
And let's hear a little bit of that.
In the United States, we don't like to talk about it, and we try to just keep it away as long as possible, sometimes even to the sacrifice of quality of life. Like, if you asked people, would you want to spend your last 30 days in an ICU, in a foreign environment, in a bed that's not yours, in a home where your grandchildren can't come and your cat can't get on the bed, and you like to bathe in the morning, or you like to shower in the morning, but the hospital's routine is set up that you get a bed bath at night. You know what I mean? You have no control. And, you know, so if you knew at the end of these 30 days you were going to die, would you really want to have spent the time there?
And Carolyn Jones, it seems like a lot of these stories are about dignity, human dignity. How do you bring that to someone in these moments, whether they're toward the end of their life or just going through a very difficult illness?
you know, I think dignity and also choice. And I think
control.
Yeah, control. We don't realize how many choices we can make and how much control we can have over how this happens. I don't think we're victims at the end of the day. I think that there are a lot of people to guide us.
We're talking this hour with Carolyn Jones, a filmmaker and photographer. Her new book is called The American Nurse. And by the way, she and Rhonda Collins will be signing copies of The American Nurse at San Francisco General Hospital tomorrow in San Francisco from 11:30 in the morning till 1 in the afternoon. Tell me, you began this, the book begins, and I guess the journey for you putting it together began in the Bronx. Tell us about the Bronx. We always think of it as a kind of a tough neighborhood, but there's a lot of humanity there.
Oh, there is. Well, first of all, it was exactly the right place to start. We live in New York, so I'm based out of New York, and I wanted to start close to home because I needed to be educated about nurses. So we went to the Montefiore Einstein Hospital in the Bronx, where hunger is a huge issue. It's obviously a very densely populated part of the country, and we met nurses. The experience there was completely unique. From the first moment that we sat down, everything I thought was going to happen didn't happen. I had gone there to shoot nurses at the end of their shifts. So I thought nurses would be coming into this studio that we had set up all disheveled and kind of covered with blood and guts and, you know,
body fluids.
And I thought their hair would be all messy and, you know, that they'd look like they had just gone through the war and be exhausted.
There's right? some real glamour shots in
well,
here.
Well, I know. So when the first people came in and they were kind of all put together, you know, and the women had lipstick on, and I thought, wait a second, there wasn't supposed to be this like change time in between. And so what I realized was that it doesn't happen that way. No one's walking around with blood-spattered clothing, and that all stays in a room, and it's safe that way, and they leave that behind when they walk out the door. And no one is disheveled, and they're not discombobulated. They're very, very together and are dealing with issues that are powerful and strong, and they need to keep their heads about them. So that was basically what I learned from the nurses there.
Well, I'd love to hear from some nurses. We are going to hear later in the hour from one who's featured in the book, but let's do a call out to folks in the audience who are nurses, or they know a nurse, or maybe you've had a personal experience with a nurse. We'd love to hear from you this hour. We're going to open the phone lines a little early. You can call us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786, or you can email us. It's forum@kqed.org, or you can always leave a comment on our Facebook page as well. You began in the Bronx. Tell us a little bit about the journey and some of the more – what are some of the more the things that really stuck with you in terms of the stories that you heard, the people that you met?
Well, the Louisiana State Penitentiary was a mind blower. I didn't expect to find what we found there. I hadn't spent much time in the prison system. That's a maximum security prison in Louisiana. And they have a hospice program there that's run by a nurse called Tanya Faust. And, you know, you walk into a prison and you just don't expect to feel or hear the stories that we saw. The inmates are taking care of the inmates that are in hospice, and they're on a schedule. So each person in hospice maybe has 4 or 5 inmates that are assigned to them. So every few hours, someone new comes in, and their whole purpose is to make that person comfortable. So, and, you know, this is – nobody's going anywhere here. It's a maximum security prison. They're in there for the rest of their lives. But there's this feeling of helping one another that comes from their fellow inmates that's very beautiful. And I think for the first time in many of their lives, they're able to give back. And it's healing and it's positive and it creates
kind of redemption almost.
Very much. Mm-hmm. And I think this is true, that in many cases, these inmates that are in hospice are having almost a better experience than the rest of us will have. Because they have someone there every moment kind of, you know, answering their every need. So that was a real eye-opener there.
Does it take a special kind of person, do you think, to be a nurse behind bars?
Oh, without it. Well, first
of
all.
You thought I was going to ask you something else.
Yeah, I mean, I thought you were going to say, does it take a special kind of person
to be a nurse?
And after a year, I'm here to tell you, yes. And I don't have those qualities. I mean, this is a very unique set of tools that nurses have. And I think it's probably you're born with half of it and the rest of it is perhaps learned, but it's extraordinary and it's different and it's unique.
What does it include?
Well, I mean, that's a list I wish I had all written out because I would sell that thing. but I guess there's this sense of being non-judgmental. That's the first thing that I find just extraordinary. You can – and I asked so many nurses this question because I couldn't quite get my brain around it. When you walk in and you have to save someone who's a murderer or they've just shot somebody else and there are two people lying there, how do you do it? How do you give so much of yourself to someone who maybe has done something so wrong? And they just don't go there. The nurses just don't think about it, and they think of everyone as though that's someone's son or that's someone's daughter or that's someone's father. And, you know, I didn't believe it for so long in this project, so I kept asking over and over.
You thought they were faking it?
I thought they were faking it. Come on. I would say, really, come on. Two people are lying there. But, no, over and over, that is a quality that we can all aspire to. I was hoping that after a year of that, a whole bunch of that would rub off on me.
Did a little of it at least?
I think maybe a little. I'm working on it all the time.
Rhonda Collins, what would you add to that list, the special qualities?
I do believe that we have a sense of purpose. And, you know, as Carolyn said, we're an incredibly well-educated workforce. We're the backbone of the healthcare system in this country.
And don't always get the respect.
That's correct.
That's why we're doing
Which,
this.
As a nurse, that was my passion, actually, to be able to do something that honored the nurse, that would get the public talking about what we do and what we contribute. We have nurses who are nurse practitioners who work fairly independently across this country and really can be an answer to some of our woes in the system. We have nurses who travel in places, go places like prisons or into places in Appalachia that you and I wouldn't go.
Yeah.
And they do it because they love their patients.
And the profession is changing a lot, too.
Oh, absolutely.
And we'll continue to with, you know, now that healthcare reform is going to be implemented, I think.
Absolutely. We continue to we're looking at other degrees, you know, a doctorate in nursing practice, which would be considered a terminal degree for nurses as they move on and out and take more responsibility making decisions. We have academia, we have hospital nurses, and we have school nurses who are so important taking care of our children.
Yeah. And talk about, and we're just coming up to a break, but there's a real diversity that you see in the book, but in the profession as well.
Absolutely. You know, we had a time of a nursing shortage where nurses had opportunities to come from other countries and work in the U.S., and we still struggle with that in some areas of the country. But we are culturally diverse. We are educationally diverse, and we are spiritually diverse in how we care for our patients.
And I want to talk about spirituality after the break. Okay. And religion and how that plays into the work that some nurses do and what people need when they're right. in the care of nurses. Right. We're going to continue our conversation with Carolyn Jones and Rhonda Collins. The new book is called The American Nurse. And as I mentioned, they will be signing those books tomorrow at San Francisco General Hospital. We'd love to hear from you this hour. 866-733-6786. 866-733-6786 is the number. You can also reach us by email, of course. It's forum@kqed.org. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny, and we'll be right back. And welcome back to Forum. Scott Schaefer here this morning. And we're talking about The American Nurse, a project and a book created by Carolyn Jones, a photographer and filmmaker. She's with us here for the hour, along with Rhonda Collins, a registered nurse whose group, the Fresenius Kabi USA, is a pharmaceutical company which funded the book. They are here. And, of course, we want to hear from you as well. 866-733-6786. Rhonda, how did you get involved in this project? I know the answer, so I, which is why I'm asking.
This is not a surprise. As you said, I am a registered nurse. I was a high-risk labor and delivery nurse. And when I moved from bedside care into management in the hospital and then on into the medical device business, and you never, ever forget the first time you make a mistake. And I had made a medication error. And because of my mistake, a patient had to have an unwanted cesarean section. And from that moment on, I thought there has to be a better way. There has to be a better way for nurses to function, to feel supported, to be able to have technology or devices that would help protect them when they're busy. And our atmosphere in the hospital can sometimes be chaotic. It's very multitasking as a way of life. And so from that, I am extraordinarily passionate about making it better for the nurse. So when we said, we just want people to be able to pronounce Fresenius Kabi, and I said, I really just want to talk about the nurse. And so I was introduced to Carolyn, and we met in a hotel lobby in Chicago, and we just started the journey. And the beautiful thing about the book is that we had a very prescribed notion of how we thought it should go, but gave Carolyn complete editorial and artistic control of the project. And it just became this living, breathing project that really is just a tribute to nursing. We kind of threw some things out the window along the way, but the end result has been this thing of grace and dignity that I think every nurse in this country can be proud of.
Well, let's bring our listeners in now. And first stop is Livermore. Linda is on the line. Welcome.
Thank you. Enjoying so much, and I can't wait to read the book. I just wanted to pass a little story on that. My son, who's 27 years old, graduated with a business degree 4 years ago. And he had a very close friend whose dad recently died after about an 18-month battle with melanoma. And sorry about that.
That's okay.
Shortly thereafter, my son called me and he said, Mom, you know, I've decided I'm going to move home and I'm going back to school. I want to be a nurse. And his experience was so moving because he spent a lot of days in the hospital with this patient over the many months to the end of the battle. And I just wondered if other people get this calling, you know, not necessarily at 18 or 20 years old, but a little bit later in life, that they know this is what they want to do and move forward with that idea.
Carolyn, certainly a lot of the interviews that are in the book are stories like that, that, you know, what inspired people to become nurses. And, you know, certainly Linda's call is very moving, but not so unique.
We talk about that a lot during this book. I asked every nurse what her path was or his path to get there to become a nurse. And there's very often a story like this. And it makes me think, how lucky are we to have nurses that enter the field through this kind of an avenue? It makes them so extraordinary because they know so much of both sides of that bedside. And that's one of the things that makes them just remarkable. So lots of people did enter nursing late in life.
It's a second career for me. I really thought that I would make my living and live my life somewhere in music because that's what I majored in when I first went to college. And I didn't enter nursing school till I was 32 years old.
Hmm. And Linda, is your son, happy being a nurse?
Well, you know, he's enrolled. He'll start in January. Unfortunately, with a business degree, not much translates. So he actually has to take prereqs. He told me that when he announced it, he said, Mom, this is going to be a process. It's not going to be a quick thing, but I am going to do it. So, yes, he will be starting in January.
Wow, and what a transition from business to nursing, huh?
Right.
Well, we wish him well. Thanks for sharing his story.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Let's go now to Greg in Santa Cruz. Welcome.
Thank you. I want to commend NPR and your guest for this project. It's wonderful to bring more attention to nurses and nursing. I'm a 75-year-old retired nurse, and actually did some of my training in San Francisco General, so I'm very fond of that. And I also, prior to becoming a nurse, I spent 4 years in the Marines. And I can tell you that the work that I did in nursing was far, far more difficult than the work I did in the Marines, although, fortunately, I wasn't in any war. But what I want to say is, when I look back on my nursing career and all of the ladies that I worked with, and I had always my boss, so to speak, was a woman, naturally, and all of those ladies were incredible. I'm choking up, but they were so idealistic and hardworking and compassionate. I'm stunned still. I'm honored and privileged to have worked with them.
Now, what are you most proud of, having been a nurse for so many years?
What am I most proud of? Just that I could serve people in that really in situations where they were, you know, seriously ill or at the end of life, and at that level of intimacy, to be able to serve people is wonderful.
Yeah. Rhonda, the caller sort of reminds you that most nurses are women, although there are many more male nurses now than there were probably when you first got into it.
When I first got in, the statistics I saw, and this is a long time ago, but it was 97% women and 3% men. And I felt proud of that.
Right.
I was really... felt good.
Yeah, well, and the caller before as well, her son's going into nursing.
The statistics are changing somewhat over the years.
Why are you laughing?
It's still predominantly a female profession. And I would say there are a lot of reasons why women are attracted to nursing. One is the flexibility of the schedules and being able to have a family, et cetera. In the early years, it was a helping, serving profession. But today, we are this incredibly disciplined, organized, professional group of people, and it's attracting more men into the profession, no doubt.
Well, Greg, you're a pioneer, I guess. Thanks. thanks for sharing your story.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much. And, you know, his reference to the Marines there reminds me that we have a clip from Brian McMillian, Carolyn, who you met down in San Diego at the VA hospital down there.
That's right. Brian had just finished his tour of duty 24 hours before I met him. So in the book, I have a photograph of him, and he's still got his sack on his shoulder because he didn't really know where he was going yet. He hadn't been assigned yet.
Where was he?
He had been in Germany, and let's hear his story.
They had just woken up from being in a coma or just woken up from sedation that was needed because they were intubated. And you'd pull a tube out of their throat, and one of the first things they would say to you, laying there missing limbs, is, "When can I go back?" And if something happens to you inside when you hear that, I mean, you love them tremendously at that moment, but you also want to smack them around and say, "No, you ain't going anywhere," because you've already given enough, brother.
And Carolyn Jones talked about the unique qualities of nurses, but working in a VA, especially working with wounded warriors, wow.
It's powerful. The nurse, that's a whole different breed of nursing. I've thought a lot about what nurses see every day. And I don't know that we as human beings are really prepared to see what a nurse in an ER, for instance, sees. But what a military nurse sees, particularly where Brian was stationed in at a hospital where he was getting people right off the field. And when they woke up, they didn't even know. The last thing they remember was being out fighting. And he's seeing these young people without limbs and kind of guiding them over that hump. I'm speechless about it. I don't know how they do what they do. And I know that
it's such an emotional field. You know, our callers have been emotional. I know that I started walking into these interviews with like a Kleenex box because all the interviews are emotional. Brian, you know, we were weeping in the room with Brian as he told us stories about some of the young men that he cared for.
Yeah. Let's read some of the comments from our listeners. We asked on our Facebook page, we asked nurses to share some of their experiences with us. And Monique writes, "One thing I know is a continuous smile on a nurse's face can bring so much more to a patient than ever thought imaginable. And premature crow's feet to a nurse." And Carol writes, "You should know that we always feel wanted, always feel needed, always feel appreciated, always feel we make a difference, and that our backs always ache, and we often are fearful and overwhelmed. You should know that this retired nurse cannot give up her license, even though it won't be used again, because it seems so much a part of who I am."
Absolutely. I just paid to renew my license this month. And I thought, well, I'm no longer in the hospital and I'm not taking care of patients. I really believe that through taking care of the profession, elevating and glorifying somewhat the profession, I am taking care of the patient.
Yeah. Let's go back to the calls. And Denise is on the line in Concord. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Carolyn and Rhonda, for writing such a wonderful account of who nurses are and what we really do. I've been a nurse for over 25 years, and I've worked within and without the state of California and currently in Northern California. And not to any of these bubbles, most of my hospice and home care patients tell me when they come out of the acute care situation, whatever that may be for them, for whatever disease process is, that they're seeing what they expected in the hospitals here in California was a level of compassion and empathy, and they're not receiving it. And I just let them know that that's just the way hospital care is right now, and hopefully it'll get better with the Affordable Care Act. But I hear that in over 85% of my patients. In their feedback, they expect what they used to get as children or what their parents had from nurses or through an experience in a hospital or healthcare situation, and it's just not there in California anymore. And I think one of the sad things that's happened in our state is that there are so many private nursing schools that are educating nurses as fast as they can. And these poor nurses who were getting into the profession for the wrong reasons, it's really beginning to show.
What do you mean, getting into it?
Well, because it's being marked as a good profession.
Yeah.
And well, certainly, the fact that it's being marketed, there's just something within us that, at least within me, that attracted me to nursing was, again, empathy.
Yeah.
I had been on both sides of the bed as a child, and I knew that this was something that I could go into, a field that I could go into that would be so diverse, and I'm a generalist.
Yeah. So, Rhonda, there is a shortage of nurses, and you know, and with, I think, with the Affordable Care Act, there's going to be a greater need for healthcare of all kinds. How are we going to deal with that? Are you concerned at all that the wrong, quote unquote, the wrong kind of people are going to go into nursing for the wrong reasons?
I think you have that in any profession. I think you just have to acknowledge that up front. But I think overwhelmingly, the task of being a nurse is so difficult, and it requires so much brain power, emotion, etc., that there will be a natural selection. People will not be able to sustain it if they don't do it for the right reasons.
Yeah.
You know, one thing that the nurses talked a lot about was a lack of time, and that the amount of time that they had with the patient has diminished so much over the years that's where the main part of this problem came from, because I think it changes the nature of the care. And the other thing that they all complained about was the enormous amount of paperwork and the redundancy of the paperwork.
Yeah. I know California recently enacted legislation to have a minimum staffing levels. I'm not sure if that's helped with the problem. Rhonda, have you talked to some of your nurse friends here?
It has. has helped in some areas and across the country with healthcare reform. You know, some of it, the meaningful use, that's a different show and we won't get into that. But the ability to be able to reduce the paperwork and simplify the bedside is definitely a focus.
Yeah. Denise, thanks for the call. Let's go to Toby now in San Jose. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks, Scott, for the program. And thank you, Carolyn and Rhonda. For everybody that doesn't get a chance to call in, from all of us nurses, I want to say thank you. I so many things I could comment on, but I teach nursing now at San Jose State. I've been a nurse for 32 years. I had my own career, and then I wanted to give back, so I went back to get my PhD. We have 17% men in our program. We have the first DNP program in the Cal State system starting, and I don't want to disparage the last caller for her opinion at all, but I have to admit that having been a nurse for so long, I had this attitude from the 80s that after managed care came in, that it just wasn't the same. I had that attitude. I was recently a patient myself over the summer in San Francisco and had the most amazing care. So I get to let go of my bias. And
it's hard to generalize, of course, about any profession.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Of course it is. And I wanted to confirm, I think I've seen nurses that come into it for the quote-unquote wrong reasons just get filtered out. You cannot sustain it.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for the call. And, Carolyn, there are a number of teaching nurses featured in the book. Is that a common sort of transition for nurses?
Well, there was one young woman that we met in Kentucky named Charlotte Ramey who is teaching women there. And I think it's a tough thing. She's not making as much money as she would as a nurse. The nurse teachers aren't getting paid well enough, so I don't think we have nearly enough of them. There are many, many more people that want to be educated in Kentucky and get into the healthcare field that can't get in because it's too jammed up. But she talked about what this profession does to the young woman of Eastern Kentucky, where she is, and how it empowers them enormously. How, you know, sometimes she would have a room full of young people that were kind of timid starting out, but once they realize that they're going to walk into a room, all eyes are going to be on them, and they have to have the answer, and that's empowered the women of her region a lot. And I think that's such a great thing.
Well, you're so great at setting up these clips we have, because we have a little bit of Charlotte Ramey here. As you say, she's an assistant professor of nursing at Kentucky Community and Technical College, and she's talking about how nursing empowers women in the Appalachian region.
Taking care of someone who is in the dying stages, or just taking care of someone who is sick, I think empowers these young women. And I have seen it empower young women. I have seen 19-year-old girls come into my college and my classrooms being very meek, very timid. And after they go through one semester, two semesters of nursing, I can see them blossom into a very empowering female, which we don't have a lot of in this area. I think due to just the nature of the Appalachian person, the women is not really, I don't want to say backwoods, or I don't want to say, but they don't, their role is not as important, I think, as what the man role is in this general area. Going through nursing empowers them to take care of people. I use it as an analogy. When you're the nurse and you walk into the room, all the eyes are on you. They are looking for the answer from you, and you have to be able to stand up and say, I know the answer, and this is what it's going to be. And that gives them the confidence I think they need to be the female leadership roles that we need today.
And Carolyn Jones, that power comes through in the photographs, doesn't it?
Oh,
well, it's a different kind of power. You know,
it's quiet.
It's not corporate power,
right? It's quiet, but you know, all of the nurses that sat for the camera gave so much. You know, I talk a lot about how there wasn't any veneer, and they didn't put on any airs, and I didn't have to wait for people to kind of figure out who they were and who they wanted to present themselves.
They knew who they were.
Yeah, they knew who they were, and they gave it immediately and freely.
Yeah. Well, I want to bring in someone who was featured in the book. At the moment, in the book, she was unemployed. Her name is Emily Fitzgerald. She is here in San Francisco, and happy to say she's now working as an RN at UCSF Medical Center. And Emily Fitzgerald, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. And how's your new job?
It's going great. I'm learning a ton, and it's an amazing place to work, so I feel very privileged.
What did you think of the book? Have you had a chance to see it?
Oh, I think it's amazing. From the photography to the stories, Carolyn did an amazing job.
And I don't know, Carolyn, have you talked to her since you interviewed her?
No, so congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Very exciting.
Yeah, we were so hoping to have somebody unemployed in the book, and we didn't even get to press practically, and there you are with a job.
I know. Well, no, I'm still very happy about it.
Well, I'm thrilled for you.
What kind of work are you doing, Emily?
I'm working in the adult medical surgery floor at UC.
UCSF?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we see a lot of post-op care for GI mostly.
Yeah. And as I recall in the book, you were, because you were unemployed perhaps, you were pointing out that it's sometimes cheaper for hospitals to bring nurses in from outside the country. And that was one of the reasons I think you felt that you didn't have a job. Now that you're on the inside, has your view of that changed at all?
No, it's still really difficult. A lot of my peers from school, they still don't have jobs. And it is really hard. I just got really, really lucky.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you had something to do with that.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah. But 1,000 people applied for this position. So
wow. Yeah.
Really competitive.
Yeah. And Rhonda, why is it, you know, we hear that there's a shortage of nurses and yet it's hard to get a job? I mean,
it's definitely regional. I mean, I think it's a little more attractive to live in the San Francisco Bay Area than to live in among the rattlesnakes in West Texas. So, I mean, it really is a regional issue.
Yeah. If you want to live here, it's tougher.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Emily, good luck to you. And thanks. Congratulations on your job.
Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks a lot. Here's a comment from Facebook. Somebody writes, I was wondering if you addressed the rapid change in the ethnic demographics of nursing, particularly the tremendous increase of Filipinas in the program, in the field rather. In some local community college nursing education programs, Filipinas are the majority of students. Is that been an experience you've seen?
Of course. And I think that it's just the changing demographics of this country. I think we're becoming a more ethnically diverse country across the board, and it will be reflected in this profession as well.
Any particular reason there's so many Filipinas?
Well, their education program is very similar to ours, if not accelerated. So their education then can prepare them to come to the U.S. and make a swifter
or easy transition.
Easier transition and to working in
yeah. Here's an email message. Lisa writes, I'm a family physician who did my residency training in the early 90s. I owe much of what I know to the amazing ICU and other nurses I met during my hospital rotations. Their intelligence, judgment, and humanity was so impressive that I decided I wanted to teach in a nursing school instead of the usual residency program for doctors. Some of my colleagues in medicine have strong feelings against the growing role of nurse practitioners in the delivery of healthcare. Definitely. I never got it before, and I still don't get it.
Wow, that's an amazing message, and thank you. Yeah, it's definitely true. There's a little bit of a culture shift, again, going on in the country between the medical practice model and the nursing model and who provides that primary care.
Yeah.
So definitely another conversation.
Yeah. Carolyn, talk about the photography. What did you use to shoot these pictures, and what were the circumstances?
Oh, no. Now I'm going to come out as this kind of old school. I have this thing about digital photography, and I wanted with this project, it was so important that we do something that was lasting and staying and archival. And so I photographed all of the nurses with my trusty Hasselblad camera, a medium format camera, and I shot everyone on black and white film. There's a little bit of formality that happens when you set up a tripod and you set up a larger camera and you're not doing snapshots, you know. And for me, that formality helped me kind of determine what this photograph was going to be. It's something that we create collaboratively. You know, someone's working very closely with me when they give of themselves to sit in front of the camera. And so I wanted it to have enormous staying qualities. So that's why I chose film and a medium format camera.
And what about photoshopping?
No photoshopping.
I guess you can't do that with film.
No. I wanted this whole project was about reality.
Authenticity.
It was about who are these people and what are they offering us? We didn't even crop. Every single picture is full frame, and no, there's no Photoshop going on there.
And what about, like, were there any privacy issues? I mean, you were trying to shoot some of the nurses in during work, or were they these were mostly profiles?
Well, it's really both. For instance, Johns Hopkins Hospital gave us enormous access to all different areas of the hospital. Now, obviously, there are because of legal reasons, there are all kinds of reasons why you can't shoot patients that haven't agreed to be part of it. But we did. We were able to shoot Rosemary Livingston with a young baby that she had cared for that had just had open heart surgery. And of course, Colleen, who's on our cover, is pictured with a nurse, with a patient that she was caring for. So there were a few times when we were able to break through. But I didn't want this to be a book about the patients. I wanted it to be real. I wanted you to really walk away with a better understanding of the nurses. So the times when I could take a photograph that was environmental were really the most successful, I think.
Let's see if we can sneak one more call in before the end of the hour. Frank in Pacifica, welcome.
Yeah, hi. It's a great program. But the comment about the nurse practitioners and all through my wife, and I know other friends are nurses for years in all different aspects, but the nurse practitioner is cheaper than a doctor, and there's a crisis going on in the hospitals now. And a lot of nurses that have been there for years are leaving because they're forced to do two and three jobs. And they're just not, so there's going to be crisis of quality and experience in these hospitals. And it's on us now, and I don't know how to fix it. They don't either. They brought in these efficiency experts and these consultants, and these people are hanging on by the thread, these hospitals. So I hope things – I don't know how it's going to get better, but it's a crisis.
Yeah, thanks very much for the call. And, beyond it being cheaper, there's going to be more patients, I think, as a result of Affordable Care Act.
Well, patients in the hospital are going to be – the very, very ill patients, and patients will be going home sicker. So we're going to have an even more diverse group of nurses that are working in the hospital, outside the hospital, in the community, helping to care for these patients. And none of us really know what this looks like. We're all working to help define that, especially those of us in this profession.
We had an email from Christina who wanted to let us know that this is Nurse Practitioner Week.
So, yes, I knew that, actually.
So the timing is good.
That's wonderful.
Good timing. Yeah. And so both of you, Carolyn, you're going to be going over tomorrow to San Francisco General Hospital, which is an awesome place. I don't know if you've been there before.
Yes. Well, I was lucky enough to photograph
yeah.
June Tung Lee there. Yes.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
So you'll be there tomorrow, both of you, from 11:30 to 1 in the afternoon?
That's right.
Well, thanks so much for the book and for coming in to talk about it. Carolyn Jones, filmmaker, photographer. The book is called The American Nurse. Thanks to you, and thanks to Rhonda Collins as well for coming in.
Thank you.
Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Tina Lauerberg, and Irene Noguchi. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll, and our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.